Call the regular meeting of the Town Discovery Bay Board of Directors to order. Would you all please rise and join me in that?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Roll call?
Roll call has been taken, and let the record reflect that all members are present with the exception of President Leet.
This is our time for public comments. Public comment, the public may address the board on any issue within the district's jurisdiction that is not on the agenda. The public may comment on any item on the agenda at the time the item is before the board's consideration. Any person wishing to speak, please come to the microphone. I understand you have 3 minutes and will be timed. There will be no dialogue between the board and the public. I have a card here, public comment card from Frank Visitin. Sir, would you like to speak?
For personal reasons, I was not able to attend or follow some CSC meetings held in March, April, and May of 2017. I was, however, expecting a response to my February 16, 2017 email to the Town of Discovery Bay summarized as follows. One, there are serious concerns regarding smart meters. Two, I opted out of PG&E's smart meter program for health reasons. Three, my email served as a formal request to A, opt out of having a smart meter installed in my parcel, and B, have only an analog water meter installed in my parcel. Four, if the Town of Discovery Bay needed a formal letter by mail, please let me know. Otherwise, I will assume the request in this email is accepted. On May 10, 2017, I received a yellow card stating my water meter installation was scheduled for the week of May 22, 2017. On May 11, 2017, I contacted the Town of Discovery Bay to obtain a status of the February 16, 2017 request and was dismayed to learn that the CSV board had already voted 5-0 against a smart water meter opt-out program. Therefore, on May 11th, 2017, I sent certified cease and desist letters to the Town of Discovery Bay and to JW Backbone Construction, Inc. Until this matter is sorted out through face-to-face negotiation or mediation or courts, I am requesting that the CSV board skip my installation and add my parcel to the current list of skipped difficult installations. In 2004, the key wording in Assembly Bill 2572 was suitable water meter by January 1, 2025. The state did not mandate smart water meter. I do not object to installation of an analog water meter. Please let me know your decision by Friday, May 19th. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Mr. President,
I'm going to refer to counsel on this case.
Thank you. I appreciate that. So just a bit of background, and then we'll take whatever direction you want to give us here. As Mr. Visitin has correctly indicated, this board had considered his request. Specifically, it was agendized and placed on the agenda. Discussion, deliberation took place during that meeting, and Mr. Visitin is correct. This board voted 5-0 to not offer an opt-in program. And you did that on the basis of the information and the research that was provided not only by the meter contractors, but by numerous sources that have done the research associated with whether smart meters do cause any health hazard or any concern. In addition, we did receive from Mr. Visitin, as Mr. Visitin reached out directly to your meter provider, the vendor that provides the smart meters, and they sent him a lengthy email as well as attached documentation identifying that they've spent hundreds of thousands of dollars researching this particular issue as to whether or not there's any harm associated with smart meters. The conclusion coming out of the meter company is there is absolutely no health risk associated with smart meters, especially when you're considering a water meter may be different than a gas meter a bit, as they draw a distinction in terms of the proximity to your house. Water meters are much further from your house than a gas meter is. And I'm not drawing any distinction other than to say that's the distinction they drew.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Visitin has now, I think by referencing the courts, has made this maybe a closed session item as a result of threatened litigation. You have two choices. One, you could defer this to legal counsel in closed session to work with Mr. Visentin to see if there is some way to resolve his concern, or you could bring it back and reconsider your action regarding the opt-out program. I don't know that there was enough dialogue or enough information for you to change your decision on that, but if you wanted to give me direction to work with Mr. Visentin and see if I could come to some resolution. The alternative, and I'll give one other point, we own the easement outside the house associated with the water meter and the installation, so we don't need the landowner's permission to enter the property to do regular maintenance and upgrades of our infrastructure, and this is an upgrade to the infrastructure. Mr. Visentin is correct that the Senate bill does not require a specific type of meter, just requires one suitable, and most jurisdictions are going with a similar type of meter to what this jurisdiction is going to. So we don't need permission or authorization. If the individual continues to reject and say, I'm not going to use it or destroy it or pull it out, then that would be contrary to your current water ordinance, and he would not be complying with the system requirements of your water ordinance, and therefore water service could be terminated on that basis. So I'm happy to take whatever direction the board sees fit at this time, but I know this is unusual for us to seek direction, but Mr. Visentin has sent numerous emails and numerous correspondence, and as you're leaking legal fees associated with this, I thought it was appropriate to get direction from you.
So my only comment in response to the presentation that you gave today, sir, is that you are correct, as counsel said, that the state did not require smart meters, but the state did also not ban smart meters. They left that up to the discretion of the individual and the majority of the water meter installations in the area. My concern is that we have one individual that's going to cost 6,500 other individuals legal fees to deal with this because of a threat of a lawsuit. So my concern is whether or not we understand that we can't charge somebody something more than what it costs, but are our legal fees recoverable from Mr. Visentin? And if in fact you have to have conversations to try to negotiate this thing and bring us a recommendation, can we ask Mr. Visentin to generously pay for our attorney's fees? Because I don't feel it's fair to distribute that across 6,500 other people because he's the only one in town that has an issue.
You could absolutely ask. Appropriate to ask, and you are correct. It's one item that I did miss. There is no legal requirement that we can find to offer an opt-out program, and there is no legal requirement to put in an analog or some other form of the meter that you chose. But you can absolutely ask.
The other side,
and that would be part of my discussion. That if you gave me direction to do that, I don't want to get into too much of the details of what
well,
we may or may not.
Well, this is not an agendized
do.
Item, so we probably discussed it further than we.
I'm just looking for direction.
I think the request is a little out in the atmosphere someplace. So I would give. I would recommend we give council directions to see if we can't just bring some consensus to this issue.
Yeah,
working.
And I will keep it short and be very cognizant of the legal fees associated with this.
And make that part of the negotiations also. If this
yes,
thing
sir.
Is going to be drawn out, then we need to make sure he understands he's paying the legal fees for this.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
I would like to just add
okay.
To what Bill said. We have a resident who's concerned, and I think we can go the extra step to see what the issues are and what can be done. I would like to understand myself, though, and it doesn't have to be here, we're not in a dialogue, but why this water meter? I know you have a passion to try to stop it. Do you have a cell phone? Do you have Wi-Fi? Do you have a PC in the house? Don't answer, please. And what do you do to deal with those as well? Is this something that's really got you? And maybe having Rob take a look at that, whether we can come to a resolution.
I'll consider those issues as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I concur with the dialogue.
Thank you very much, Chris. We had other public comment. Yes, sir.
Yeah, hi, Terry Mahaney. I live on Discovery Bay Boulevard. I'm back again because of the speed on the boulevard. A while back, our town paid for radar and two police cars and trained two officers. And if I was reading it correctly, their report last month, they did not write one speeding ticket in Discovery Bay. So I have talked to them. I have gotten on leverage with them. I don't know what you folks can do. I don't know if there's anything that anybody can do. But we fork out money to have them have the units in the cars and do nothing about it. So, I mean, I don't know if there's anything you guys can do or, you know, talk to somebody or whatever. But anyhow, it's like it's 40 miles an hour in. The dash keeps going 40 miles an hour. I mean, it's like nobody cares. You know, and I'm getting real tired of it. One other thing, I'm not real tech savvy. I don't understand the website that you guys have. Now, would it be okay if I called you and maybe you can give me some information on where to find answers to questions like I'm asking you guys questions right now? I realize you don't talk back to me. Where can I go to find answers to what is brought up now? With his water meter thing, for one, I understand what he's saying. All he wants is just a regular analog meter. I don't know where you guys answer questions to what's brought up here. So now, could I give you a call possibly, or is there some place I can go to talk to somebody to figure out how to get through this website to find answers?
Yeah, you can give the office a call during normal business hours, and if we, you know, can answer your questions, we certainly will.
Beautiful. All right, great. Thank you guys very much. Appreciate it.
Okay, any other public comment? Hearing none, seeing none, public comment is closed. I'd like to move the consent calendar.
Move approvals. Of the consent calendar.
Second. Then moved and second. Is there any discussion from the public? Hearing none. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. We have area agency reports and presentation. Is it? We do. Come on up, Chief.
Well, good evening, Vice President Graves and fellow members. I just want to introduce myself. I'm Brian Helmick. I'm the interim fire chief for East Contra Costa Fire. And I'm here to actually address any questions that you may have. We're in a pretty big transition right now within the district. And I know there's been a lot that's gone on over the past many, many years. So I get to know all of you individually. I'm here to serve you. We're in a very complex and very difficult situation within the district, and I'm sure that you're aware of. I spent many years working at the station right next door, so I'm familiar with this area. I fought many of fires within this town. So with that, again, I hope to continue to bring you information as we continue to develop. But you may have some questions that you may have for me, and if so, I'd love to try to answer them.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for coming in. Good to meet you.
My pleasure.
What's your level of optimism? It's a new role for you and a real challenge.
Yeah, so I'm within the first 45 days. There's been a lot exposed to me. I've built on truth and transparency. So I mean, we're in a very critical situation here. We've got 250 square miles. We have 3 fire engines to do so. We run about 7,000 calls a year, and it takes about 9,000 engines or turns of the wheel to be able to accomplish those 7,000 calls. So it's a very large footprint of an area, and we have only 3 engines to do it. We're at 4 today, but as of July 1, we're going down to 3. One of the issues that we've had within the district has been that we've had a lot of temporary solutions. I don't know if you followed us, but since 2002, we have found ourselves, we've hired 28 firefighters, we've laid off 38, and or 38 have left our organization, and only of those 38, 5 have been from retirement. So you just kind of look at those numbers and you can see that we have a huge retention issue. And that is one of the reasons why we're going from 4 stations down to 3, is we're having a hard time maintaining our employees. Furthermore, our compensation is approximately 40% less than any other agency within the area, so that compounds our retention issues. I am very optimistic of the fact that our members do a very good job with what they have. I'm very optimistic that I will try to run as efficient of an organization as we can with the resources that we have. With that being said, is we do not have adequate fire protection within the area. It is going to take the district, myself, and the board to be able to better communicate the situation that we have. We're working on that now. In the next couple of months, I hope to do a state of the district and set down some footprints and some steps that we plan on taking, which will obviously involve all of you. I'll come back and try to communicate where we are, where we're going to go. But as of today, there is not a defined solution. And we do not have long-term permanent funding. I think that one thing I will say is one thing that is going away is temporary patches, band-aids, and we are going to be living within our means. And although that may not be the solution, I believe that's the beginning of the solution, is trying to have a solid foundation, to be a good steward of what we have, and try to take steps to move us to make decisions that are sustainable. So I am optimistic that we have the right people. I'm optimistic that we have a community that cares. I just believe as a fire district, we need to be able to communicate a little clearer about what our true issues are, the recommended path that we need, and how we need support. And I hope that we have a very clear future.
Good. Good answer.
Yeah, sorry, Bill. Yeah, this I think, I'm concerned not only about the fire response, but emergency response and medical types of things. I know the fire departments, all of them,
yes,
had a more medical continue after the fire. And I know that we have the county hired, I don't know if it's American Medical Response, AMR, or whatever. Are they stationing a vehicle, ambulance, over on Vicksburg?
They are not.
How are they positioned in our area?
That's a very good question. So the reason that you may have that belief is because some time ago we had what was called quick response vehicles, otherwise known as QRVs. And they were stationed at Station 59. That's on Discovery Bay. That's the station right off of Discovery Bay. The county actually was taken over by Contra Costa County Fire, which is not us. We are East Contra Costa. We have a separate entity. We have a little identity crisis going on with that one. But with that being said, is that they took over the ambulance contract about a year and a half, almost 2 years ago. So they manage all the ambulances. They took all of the QRVs, the quick response vehicles, out of the system countywide. It wasn't specific to us. And they put more ambulances, transporting ambulances, onto the street. So we actually have more ambulances than we had in the past. It's a very dynamic system. So the system fluctuates depending upon the call volume that we have. We're part of a bigger system. So we do have what we believe to be adequate EMS responsing within the area. It fluctuates between the amount of ambulance we have due to call volume. And if we get saturated, move some more vehicles out. But we do not have a quick response vehicle there. The issue that we have, we run our calls, like I told you, about 7,000 calls a year, about 4,700 of them are medical aid calls. The complexity that we have is that the ambulances, they rely upon the fire department to be able to support them with their operations. We go hand in hand. Ambulances do a good job of being able to provide care and transport them to the hospital. They will not extricate you out of a vehicle. They will not be able to get you from upstairs to downstairs. They need people to lift you up, whatever it may be. If it's a fire-related situation, I'm not going to go in and get you. The EMS system is antiquated by the fact that your first responder firefighters, which we get there, we're supposed to get there before the ambulances do, in regards to time and distance, provide that primary initial care to you. And we transfer the care to the ambulances, and then we continue it in transport. We are not paramedics either. We're basic life support, and that's something that hopefully in the future we can remedy, not only our staffing but our apparatus, but it's also a service level in regards to paramedicine. So we do not have a QRV there. You have more ambulances on the street, but it doesn't fix your fire problem, and it doesn't get firefighters there first. So you do have ambulances.
Yeah, and I understand that, and I understand the reasons why, financial reasons. I guess where I'm looking for a little direction. My thought process would be if your Station 59 was called out in the service somewhere, say in Pasco or something, I would like to have at least have the community have the availability of an ambulance sitting over there. So if there was a medical emergency, they can't go to the fire, I understand, but at least if there was a heart attack or something in Discovery Bay, they'd be able to respond. Who can help us kind of make that fluctuation and move ambulances around? Is that through the county supervisor's office or?
No, it's really not. I mean, that is a fire department EMS operational process. And I want you to understand right off the bat, I want what you want. I mean, I would desire to have a paramedic and a fire engine and an ambulance sitting in the station right next door. I mean, I want that too. The thing is that with covering 250 square miles, it's the city of Oakley, Brentwood, Marsh Creek, Morgan Territory, Bethel Island, Knights End, Byron, Discovery Bay. All of our citizens are very important. And it's a, and that's the thing is, I know and I respect that this is your firehouse and the one on Bixler's your firehouse, but you're part of the system. And so bringing a unit into this specific area, it's something that just really isn't achievable with the resources that we have, and it fluctuates. There are times that you will find them, probably many times. You'll go and we sit in the Safeway parking lot. There's many times we'll drive by, you'll see them at the fire station. So there are many times they're there. But the call volume in Discovery Bay and Byron, it equivalents to approximately 10% of our calls. So 90% of our runs, you know, approximately 84% of our calls are between Brentwood and Oakley. Out here is about 10%, only 1 to 2% is the Morgan Territory Marsh Creek corridor. So we have to station vehicles in between. And so again, I want what you want, but having to cover such a big footprint of the resources we have, staging units in an area that generates 10% of our runs, it's very difficult. I hope that makes sense. It's not what you want to hear.
Yeah, it's not what I wanted to hear, but I understand. Thank you.
Which goes to the challenge that the district has and the fact that it's a large regional area, and yet the population is spread out with regards to concentrations. I probably just want to say, you know, you do have a tough road to hoe here. You know, we're here to support what you're doing. You know, I've been going to those meetings over there since for like 8 years, 9 years now. I do want to tell you that we're very aware of the point that you don't really, I want to tell you that I know you don't have a spending problem. You have a revenue problem. You guys run leaner than you should be running. You have dedicated dedicated firefighters that work under scale for the Bay Area because they live here and they care about the area. So just, I just want to say we're aware of that and we appreciate that. We appreciate the heart and the passion that goes into what you do for your job. Again, it's a revenue problem, and that's the problem that we're having a problem finding a permanent solution to.
And I would like to say that that's accurate. It's a revenue and resource issue. I mean, that's really what it is. We're supposed to have our master plan identified as 10 stations within the area that we serve. We're currently at 4 today, but going down to 3 for our retention issues that you described. But as we continue to move forward, it's really important to me that I hear from you. I do not believe that our current situation is achievable to be remedied without being done throughout the community. I think it's going to take all of us identifying what the true issues are and identifying what we feel is a reasonable level of protection. And so I just want you to know that I am your fire chief. We are your fire department. We know that we're under serving you, but we are looking to hear better ways that we can do that. What I would do in return by you communicating to me is I'll try to provide clarity to our situation. I'll be able to provide some realistic steps that we can take to enhance services that are sustainable. And it's going to be a conversation over time. So I look forward to working with you, and I do thank you for your patience and support.
One more question.
Yes, sir.
Chief Henderson would come in with some statistics. Yes. Time to come in. Can we expect to see those?
Absolutely. And I asked you, was in your last follow-up question, is what it is that you want to see. So I can, we have operational reports. If I'm unable to make it, I can continue to forward them so you can see them. But if there's anything more than that you want to see, one thing that I'm working on right now, because like I said, they're our name, people believe us to be who we are not. Our revenue issue, our retention issue really is a revenue, because we can't care folks effectively and we don't provide them long-term job security. It's actually a two-parted issue. And we have to message very clearly when we aren't able to open more stations, but we compensate our members more. It can easily be taken out of context of why. So the point I'm trying to lead to is that my objective is to start building very factual, non-emotional, very factual baseline clarity editorials that I will start to share with you. And if there's specific topics of which you feel that people need to know, ones that you hear about our fire protection that you think that you need, I will put it onto, I will build them, I'll get them approved through our board, I'll put them on our website, frequently asked questions. But I believe, again, that we need people to truly understand who we are, what we're doing, and why we're doing what we're doing, so it's not left through assumption. So I do appreciate that support, and let me know how we can better serve you.
Thank you very much. And thanks for taking the time to come out of time. I appreciate it very much.
Thank you all.
Okay. Veolia, you're up. I feel like I'm at a news conference here. I've done multiple microphones in front. It's kind of cool.
I'm Dr. April, attending our site practices. Site training, the design space, and I'm Dr. April. All monthly and quarterly reports were submitted to the state, water and drinking water boards. Everything's running well, all wells are running excellent. We produced around 45, I think it was, million gallons. We're still saving about 40% compared to 2013, so we're still doing really good on conservation. Wastewater is still running excellent, well below our parameters, meeting all parameters beautifully. All lift stations are running well. And the staff will continue to work hard to keep the backlog of maintenance up to date and do a very minimum.
No, like no emergencies. Report back. Anybody comment from Chris?
How has a lift station been operating in the last couple of years?
Since we redid, yeah. Beautiful. No issues. Since we rehabbed it, we're going to talk to doing a great job.
Yeah, there's not a truck parked there daily like there used to be all the time when I left the house.
How many times did it drive down when they didn't do the maintenance work?
Bill?
No, I'm good. Nice report.
Thank you again. I would take this moment to remind the board that if you have nothing to do at 11 o'clock tomorrow, Bill is having a
annual cookout
over at Plant 1. I personally can't make it, but...
Plant 2.
Yeah.
If you go to Plant 1, you buy yourself.
Okay. Plant 2, thank you. And again, thanks, Bernie, for that.
Good job.
We're still under... Our wastewater production is still lower than what is it? I don't have the mic.
Wastewater flows.
Yeah. What are we at?
1.2.
I'm sorry.
1.2.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Next on the item F, discussion of possible action regarding a contract amendment to the SCADA improvement. I will turn this over to staff.
And I will turn this over to Dina, our finance manager, to introduce this item.
Hello, Dina.
The PLC panel for the SCADA project will be finalized and hopefully testing on Friday. We're keeping our fingers crossed. All hands have been on deck within this week to try to get this project done and completed. However, this project has not been without hiccups. So there were a few issues that occurred during the programming of the system, and to update you tonight, I brought in Bermuda Scalanini and Justin Shove. He's going to discuss any potential issues that have happened, and give you a full report on the project update.
Thank you.
Good evening, board. Thanks for having me here. Thanks for the introduction, Dina. Everybody received the staff report for the packet. I'm not going to read through the details of the report. I was actually reading through it and probably would make some clarifications to that, but the gist of the numbers and the budgets that are discussed in there are true. But just I thought I would go through the project real quick, just a brief background. I'm sure the board's aware of what the PLCs are within the system and the SCADA system in general, because I know there's been upgrades to the wastewater SCADA system in recent years, so that's probably enlightened everybody as to what the SCADA and the PLCs are. So the district currently has two contracts for the Willow Lake PLC upgrade. There's a contract with Lurk and Scalanini, my firm, the firm that I work for, to provide the engineering and construction support. LSCE, my company, in turn, has a sub consultant contract for electrical engineering for Electrical Power Systems, who's out of Fresno, who's done all of the electrical designs for the Willow Lake, all of the water system infrastructure that's had any electrical design components been by EPS. They're an electrical engineer that's worked for our company for 25 years. That's one contract with our firm, which was in the amount of $74,300. There's also a contract that the district has with Telstar Construction, who is the contractor who's been awarded the work to do the installation, and their contract amount is $168,950. So just a brief background, we've been working on this since 2016, developing the parameters for what the upgrade would consist of. Essentially, the upgrade was spurred because of some of the upgrades taking place at the SCADA within the wastewater plant. And now that the wastewater plants are more or less upgraded, the transition is going towards the water system to bring it within the central SCADA system that the district has recently invested in. And we focused on the Willow Lake plant first this year, and then the Newport water treatment plant the following year, because the majority of the issues with the antiquated control systems are tied with the Willow Lake mostly. But both systems have antiquated PLCs, which has resulted in a lot of hands-on operation, frequent alarms that can't be fixed, and just a system that doesn't provide the flexibility to the operators. So Willow Lake is one of two treatment plants you're all aware of within the system. It has three wells that feed into it, and all the plant is treated for iron and manganese, and the treated water is stored in the two large 750,000-gallon storage tanks. And from there, booster pumps are used to deliver the water to the system to maintain the delivery pressures that go to the services. And it's operated through the TLC and SCADA system for automated control, alarm functions, notification to the operators, and reporting, collection of data that gets reported to the state. In general, this type of work involves there's the two components, like I said. There's the engineering and construction. And within our contract for the engineering, what that involved was first developing the contract documents for the facilities that would be built. So that was collection of as-builts, identifying exactly what hardware, what programming, what functionality is out there since the plant was originally built and all upgrades that have taken place since then. A lot of wire-to-wire kind of checks, making sure all the as-builts are totally accurate, then building the documents that are going to be specifying the hardware and the transition, so how we would make a transition from an old system to a new system without interrupting service, which requires a lot of interaction between the engineer, the operator, and the contractor. There was bid solicitation as part of our contract, and there was also construction assistance. And so the construction assistance is essentially some meetings, a pre-con meeting, reviewing the contractor's submittals, verifying that they're conforming with the requirements, and essentially once it gets to the point of everything being approved on paper, then building the panels and demonstrating in a factory setting that the panels and the programming are doing what we say they need to do. So early in the project, we identify functionally exactly what the system is supposed to do in terms of how it pumps water, how it pumps chemicals, how it alarms, and there were some upgrades identified through that design process that we've done, including some instrumentation that was a request from the operators that was really not like a big cost item per se. It was really just going through that design process. You improve the system. You make it more functional by having that collaboration. So in this factory test with the contractor, the idea is to witness exactly what it will do before they deliver to the site and install it and do the wire-to-wire connection to make the transition so that the transition is as seamless as possible. Now on a standalone site, we might have a factory test that may have some issues that can potentially be addressed in the field. On a standalone, say, there's a lot of jurisdictions we work for that just have satellite wells. They're just remote wells, and their system essentially runs on many other wells. And so you can address issues in the field after it's installed. But in the case of this plant, it's a critical infrastructure. It's one of two, and we're getting into the high demand season. So there was a big focus on having a tight timeline and schedule to make sure this work gets done before we're getting into the hot weeks, which were, next week is going to be some triple digits, I believe. So, and making sure there's no glitches when we make the transition. So cutting to the chase, to be blunt, the Telstar, who's the contractor, is a good contractor. We've done work with them, the district's done work with them, we've done work on the wastewater plants, my firm's done work with them on other projects. They're very qualified programmers. There's been no issue with their budget or so far, or their schedule. They're running up to the clock. So far, it appears that they'll be able to do everything within their allotted time frame to do the work. What took place was their lead programmer who was assigned, or their programmer who was assigned to this project had a medical emergency before the programming was finished. And so what that kind of revealed itself to us in full form when we were at the factory witnessing what the panel was supposed to do, and there was numerous issues associated with that. So given the necessity for absolute quality control on this, and this has all just taken place in the last few weeks, we told Telstar it's not ready to go to the field. You need to do X, Y, Z. It was a long list of items that needed to be corrected. And they assigned a programmer who we worked with and is also very good. I have nothing bad to say about any of the programmers, but really it was just putting a new person on the job that had to finish where another person started and pick up that slack. But I believe that he was a very good programmer. They pulled him off a different project to be assigned to this because they're committed to meeting that schedule. So it has resulted in multiple additional factory witnesses, two additional in-person from our electrical engineer. Then from that phase, we said, we're getting to the point where you almost got it, and we can do it via video conference. So we had two video conferences where we witnessed what the panels were doing. And then at that point, we finally gotten to the point where we believe that the programming is there, so we authorize them to release the panels to be delivered and installed. This week they're doing the installation. Bernie just let me know that he's a little bit concerned with some of the, I need to get some specifics from him. I don't believe it's programming related, probably more some of the wiring or instrumentation, but I'll get the specifics from Bernie, but the focus here is we needed that support from our electrical engineer in light of this history, and it was a benefit to the project. And so now at this point we're requesting an amendment to cover those fees from our electrical subconsultant. We're sensitive to the extra cost, so LSCE offers to waive what normally there would be a markup for passing these services through our firm, and we just waive that and have held a certain amount of time so that we can just pass directly the electrical engineering cost, which is in the amounts presented in the agenda. So one might ask, well, if it's Telstar's problem, why not make them pay for it? And it's a fair question. I would say they provided good service to the district, and they've had the heart of the district in mind in terms of meeting the schedule, quickly responding, assigning a programmer, and when we told them it wasn't ready, they worked the long hours and did the extra testing to demonstrate to us. I was on the phone with them multiple hours, multiple times to discuss exactly how the system needs to operate and how they need to show us that on the screen that that's what it's going to do. And so I would just say that they've honored to the best of their abilities their contract, which it seems like they haven't submitted any change orders. They're essentially on schedule. So to that regard, I think pursuing something like that with Telstar would alter that relationship and would be an uphill battle. So I would recommend against pursuing these through contract with Telstar.
So really what you're saying, because of the issue, the medical issue, that you're passing off the bill to us. I'm making it pretty simple.
Right.
Yes.
Because of the staffing issues that Telstar had, they were not ready to deliver those products to the site. We were compelled to provide those services to ensure that the products that are delivered have been properly QA'd and QC'd. So it's a service, it's a contract with my firm, not with the contractor, where the extra costs are coming from. The contractor's not asking for any extra costs. My firm is.
Your firm was concerned, though. as a result.
We were concerned as a result of...
And you did just what you should have done. That's really good. And that's part of the partnership.
Right.
But I think it's a real hard request.
Yeah.
To honor that it trickles down, and this isn't our money, this is our residents' money, and we have to treat it as such.
I understand that.
What was the original contract amount, Justin?
For LCE, my firm is $74,300.
And you're asking for a $10,000 increase?
Yes.
We're actually only going to end up paying a $3,000 increase, right?
What, yeah, well, over budget.
So now that we've had this explained to us, what's staff's recommendation on this? Do you have a question?
When I read the report and saw that there were programming errors, I'm sensitive to having working relationships, not only on because of, you have many clients and you work with Telstar, I can care less. They, as Kevin mentioned, and those concerned, these are already paid monies. And because Telstar was hired to perform this job, whatever reason, things happen. We should not be burdened with an extra cost because they couldn't perform. Now, I think it's wise that you went ahead without our approval and hired somebody to make sure it all worked out. That's great. And that's what a good, you know, client will do. But I'm a little hesitant to agree to pay this amount from the standpoint that Telstar didn't perform. That's an issue between, let me ask this question before I go too far. Did we hire Telstar and we hired?
Yes, there's two separate contracts.
And Telstar was recommended to us.
They were the qualified low bidder.
And we've used Telstar in the past.
Oh, I understand that, yeah. But anyway, I think you get a sense of where I'm at.
Yeah.
Maybe there needs to be a discussion with our staff on how to resolve this in a little different manner. Maybe there's a three-way kind of thing that needs to take place. Telstar puts a little bit this in, and you guys put some in, and if we have to absorb a little of that, maybe that's an option that would ease my mind a little bit.
Sure. Yeah, I just want to hear staff's recommendation. Seems like we're getting burdened with some expenses.
Well, the way staff sees it is we're between a rock and a hard place. I'm sure Telstar would say, we don't need this extra supervision. We don't need this extra quality control. We got this, and we're performing under our contract. The problem is we need to make sure that they're performing it to our level, that we're getting the quality that we expect, and in order to get that quality assurance, we need to put in the extra time and the money in order to ensure that that takes place. So we're between a rock and a hard place on this, and one thing to consider is that we did have extra, we budgeted extra money just in case, which, so the total overage on this would amount to a little over $3,000 rather than $10,000. But it's an overage just the same.
Oh, I see. Yeah, $3,092.
So staff's recommendation is that we go forward with this, and we can certainly talk to council or have further discussions on whether we can see some wiggle room with Telstar ponying up some money out of this. But I don't think it's likely.
Well, I don't care where the money comes from. I think if we just want to say, okay, we budgeted X amount of dollars. The project came in at X amount of dollars. So for $3,000 over, because of a Telstar issue and a quality control issue, I would feel better than if that $3,000, which is not a big amount of money in what we're talking about, but it's still money, that could be worked out between Telstar and your firm, $1,500 each or whatever the number is, and I think I'm smiling at you.
We could certainly have a conversation with Telstar to split the overage.
So I'm confused, although I read the report and it does explain in the last paragraph that the project with the additional electric engineering will be $3,092 over budget. Why is $10,142 being asked for?
That's a cost to obtain the extra services of that engineer to monitor the work, but we had budgeted you have the figures?
Yes, I do. So the total project cost was $242?
Yeah. The total combined cost with the engineering fees and the Telstar contract for the installation was $242,950. District budgeted $250,000. So we were coming in under budget until this issue arose, and the extra engineering fees came into play, which were $10,000. So that puts the project $3,000 over budget.
Very well. Is the math wrong here, or what?
No, very well spoken.
The electrical engineering was actually $12,000, but we just are waiving our remaining budget that our company had, which was $2,000. We're absorbing that into our existing budget. So.
Wait a minute. So, if it's $7,050 under budget, then that's a surplus.
That's a surplus.
So why are you adding that to $3,092 over budget?
No. You have a surplus of $7,000.
Yeah.
And now we have an extra cost request of $10,000.
So difference.
Oh, so that's where the
between the seven and ten.
Okay. So it's $10,000 total, but the net is $3,000. Okay. I'm sorry. I'm reading it the wrong way. Couple of issues. One is that we need to, relationships are important all the way around for everybody's concern, and performance, and getting people to work for free causes performance issues. In other words, if you say, hey, I'm not going to pay that $3,000, that can cause a performance issue and a quality issue out the door. And even if it gets remedied, it's more time for Viola, more time for, you're right, we are between a rock and a hard place. The
project's already done. So it's not asking anybody to work for them, it's just asking them to cover that extra $3,000, that's what I'm looking for.
The project is nearly done. They're doing the installations.
Well, I heard you say that there were still some things.
Tomorrow the plan is to begin the transition. So the panels are installed. The wiring has taken place. Tomorrow the plan is to bring one by one offline the old modules and online the new modules and test the systems to ensure that they're operating one by one. So by the end of the week, the plan is to have the system on the new panel, and then the old panel is just it's abandoned. So there's still work to do. Then there's final records and closeout, warranty submittals, and things like that. But essentially, the bulk of the work is done. They have submitted two pay requests to date. They haven't obviously submitted a pay request for full work because they haven't done full work. And I don't know the numbers on that, but it's just to let you know there's still a final pay request that Telstar would have to submit. That would be the closeout of the contract for the remaining individual
wouldn't have gotten it. We wouldn't have this issue, probably, because we were on track.
So then back to the issue is
that Lunar hired an electrical engineer to design the program and electrical work that needed to be done. He was the one that originally designed the plant with me, Joe. So Joe's budget was to monitor and attend certain meetings during this process. But when Telstar had the issue of switching up programmers, there was additional testing that had to be done that Joe had to oversee, which ate up Joe's budget. So Joe is now, he was already scheduled to come out. He is your quality control guy to make sure that the town was getting what they paid for. Right now, he's not coming out because he's already ate his budget up, and this is what Lunar is trying to get extra money for, to have your QA and QC guy come out and make sure Telstar did program and the plan is running like it was designed to do. So that's where we're holding up, as in Mike said, better walk in a hard place, because your inspector who's going to sign off the work saying, hey, everything is working like it's designed, has already ate all his budget up.
Is
that cleared up?
My concern is that I don't have any problem. I understand it 100%. He needs to be paid. There's no question about it. If that's his fee to make it all happen, great. after the fact, behind the scenes, on the final invoices from your firm and from Telstar. They give us a credit for $1,500 and Telstar $1,500 on our final invoice, and that makes the $3,000 putting us in budget. That's all I'm saying.
We could certainly make that pitch.
Okay. I mean...
doesn't have to be approved tonight, right?
I'm pretty sure my firm... I can't speak.
So what you're saying, Bill, is
let's approve it, but let's try to negotiate that.
Behind the scenes, on the final invoice, we give direction to staff on the final invoice from those two firms that we get a credit of $1,500, and then the board is happy because we're in budget. It wasn't our fault that their guy got sick. We don't need to pay his sick pay.
I got you, but I think that that gets a little, I don't know that we can refuse to pay them what they've billed us based on the contract that we signed with them.
No, I'm not saying we refuse to pay them. We just ask them to give us
that's
a credit.
Okay. That's, well, yeah. Okay.
If they give us a credit, great.
Can't hurt
they
to ask.
They don't.
Right. Can't hurt to ask. I'm with you. Okay. I understand.
I'll do a review of that the specifications.
I'm sorry?
See if I'll check the specifications thoroughly and just see if there's any sort of language in there that kind of provides that leverage. You know, for the district.
You understand our position.
I do. Yeah.
Well, yeah. My position would be to decline the $10,000 totally. But if we do, but I understand the position we're in. And Bill's suggestion would be good, $1,500 apiece, $1,500 and
whatever,
$40-some-odd, half and half, is a way it could be. And we do not overrun our budget. I could go that way.
What has to happen tonight, Council?
I was just going to ask Member Pease if he'd make that as a form of motion or make that his motion. So the way I heard it is I heard that we are going to approve the contract amendment as provided by staff with the condition and the direction of staff to request that the $3,000 be split amongst the other firms so we maintain budget.
So before you write that, could I just do... The what's on the table now is to approve the $10,000. What you're saying is to approve the $10,000 and then ask if they would.
That's correct.
Okay, why don't we decline the $10,000?
Well, because we need to move forward with the contract.
Because they need the contract approved.
We can't leave it hanging. We just talked about it, and
I can't think of a way that it happens. Since they need to move forward.
The other cost that will incur is a rippling effect at that point because it's going to mess up what Violi's doing. It's going to mess up progress. And who knows when Joe's going to be available a month from now to come do this because he's on another project. So I just think the ripple effect doesn't make it. I appreciate where you're going with it, but I don't think the ripple effect.
And we'll ask the question and we'll have them ask the question before execution.
We're in discussion.
Still discussing. Have we had any other issues, Bernie? When I went through this, this whole upgrade has gone really solid. Is that true?
I got a technical problem here. We have a motion on the floor, and we don't have a second, and we're having discussion.
I didn't hear him say yes, accepting that as the motion.
Okay,
so
fine. And we don't have a motion.
I haven't heard a motion at this point.
Okay, good.
Thank you.
For the most part, it's just taking longer than was anticipated with the bid packet.
Yes.
The original schedule was to be done today. It's like it's going to be Friday before we get totally done with everything. It's just taking longer. So we got two panels that are live. We're making live, so we're decommissioning one panel while we put another panel online. And right now we only have one well running and auto on the new system. The old system won't run the other two wells, so they're going to have to be running hand. So there's some programming issues that hopefully can get worked out between now and Friday.
Okay.
To get it done. But they've been staying back every night till 6 to try to stay on schedule.
Thank you, Bernie. And I wasn't just looking at this. This has been an ongoing upgrade, this program.
Yeah, so
it's gone pretty smooth.
Yeah, it's gone pretty smooth, right. I mean, the field portion of the work is a short period of time, but the work's actually been taking place since the end of January when their contract was approved by the district.
Okay, this is this is a hiccup.
Are there any other questions for the board on with regards to this?
I'm done.
Is there a motion?
Yeah, I can move the motion that legal counsel outlined, which is approved staff recommendation with the request that the overage, $3,000+, be requested as a credit from the suppliers.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay, the motion has been made second. Is there any comment from the public on this?
Just as a layman sitting here, sorry.
Thank you.
Mr. Gâteau.
Good evening, Brian Gâteau. Just sitting back here listening, I guess I'm a little confused that you would think, though, that there'd be some checks and balances when you have two different vendors providing a service, that there's milestones and each vendor then has to take into account when problems do arise, and then there's some repercussions built into that. So it just seems odd to me that there wasn't that, as I'm listening to you guys talk about it. That's all.
Thank you. All right, any other public comment? Okay, hearing none, there's a motion on the floor. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
In the future.
Okay, motion carries. Move forward, Mr. Schroeder.
Thank you. Thank you, board.
Okay, that is the big, huge action item calendar that we have for tonight. Informational items, anything, it's blank, so I'm assuming there is nothing to be presented. Is that correct?
Correct.
Director's reports, there have been a couple of standing committees, I think, or at least one that's met fairly recently, like a couple of, didn't you guys have a communications committee?
Yeah, today? Yeah, oh. Today at 5:30 we had our communications committee meeting. Director Mayer and I attended that with staff. There's good progress being made on the feasibility of a digital signboard in the community, and we're working on getting the plan in place financially, what it would take to put that sign in and where we could put that possibly. So it's going forward. And then the second item, Director Mayer and Carol have made some great progress on our website with the Mac. We've got it on our website, and we're working on some email push systems so that people can get emergency alerts and stay current on that local activities. So I think it's going good.
I would encourage the communication committee to move forward with those signs as soon as possible. It seems like it's been going on for quite a while. I know it's probably a lot to try to disseminate. So I would love to see a report on that soon, because we're out there with that trailer down there telling us about a boat show. Speaking of which, the boat show is this weekend under other reportable items, and the community center is going to have some representation down there in the nonprofit. Am I correct, Matt? Mm-hmm. I think we're actually sharing a spot with you guys. So they've invited the local nonprofits to be a part of that, and I'm glad to hear that the community center is going down to do that. Manager's report. Anybody? Anybody? Okay.
Sure.
Oh, Matt?
Yeah. So, real quick, just some highlights. So, summer activities guide hit the street last week. I think maybe all of you got it in the mail. Registration opened on Thursday. It's been going crazy and been busy, so that's good. Classes will start on June 12th, our whole summer program. Let's see, the summer jam. I threw some posters right there on the DSW guys, so you have that. That's coming up, and Brian's been working with Monica on that. They have all kinds of good stuff coming out. Let's see, the summer hiring process for our part-time summer lifeguards and front desk folks is in the final stages now. We're kind of getting those last few folks through there. Training for the lifeguards starts on Sunday. The pool opens Memorial Weekend. We'll be open weekends until June 12th, and we'll be open at this point 5 days a week, but who knows, we might get a couple more days in there. And let's see, I think that's about it. Any questions?
How's been the you have a typical challenge in finding lifeguards as sustainable employees for the summer. How's it going this year?
It's been great so good. Far. I almost want to say, knock on wood, it's been great so far.
I know that's been a challenge.
15 to 20 and I'm happy to report that probably 95% of them are all Discovery Bay teenagers, which is what we're promoting, which is ride your bike to work over here, get off the boat at the end of the pier, walk over here, go to work, that kind of thing. So we're real excited about that, putting our youth to work.
Glad to hear that. Thanks, Matt. Yes.
Right, thank you.
Virgil, do you have anything you'd like to report? Do you need anything more from you? Yes, one exciting, if it only gets exciting.
Actually.
Promise?
Yes.
Okay.
We did our first requisition for the bond, and we received back almost $5 million. So that was real exciting. So we have $3.9 million check. $3.1 million check, and we're going to the county to deposit it. So it was really exciting.
Some of that's replenishing reserves?
Yes.
Awesome.
Yes.
Good. Thank you. That is exciting. You're absolutely right. General Manager's report.
Okay, I have just four things to update you on. The first one's kind of a little bit of a teaser, but staff has been exploring the potential of hiring a grant writing company that can assist us with securing potential grants that would benefit our town. Staff considered several companies, and we presented our findings to the Internal Operations Committee. With committee input, a decision has been made to go with a company called California Consulting. A representative for the company will be at the next board meeting to explain their services and answer your questions, so that is coming soon. The next issue is I'm pleased to announce that we have completed our annual water quality report ahead of schedule, and residents should be receiving the report in the mail. This June, so this will be coming out. You're getting the first copies. And
this is exciting.
Looks great. It's a very favorable report. Don't go anywhere yet. I also have some early versions of the official Town of Discovery Bay Guide, which will be in the Brentwood Press Business Directory coming out in July. So your photos are in there. So if you need any, you can cut those out and send those to friends and family. And my last report is that our website now includes a link to the Contra Costa County Telephone Emergency Notification System, which will allow residents to sign up and receive telephone alerts if a county emergency is declared. We notified residents of this link through our new email blast system. And that concludes my reports.
Okay, the correspondence is listed. Future agenda item.
Okay, I have an issue on the correspondence. That's in reference to the P6 committee and purchasing a vehicle for the CSO officer. And I'd just like to ask our general manager, because of his prior experience, couldn't the sheriff's department maybe put and use one of their vehicles that they're going to take out of service and give it to the CSO so they wouldn't have to purchase a new vehicle out of the P6 funds? I don't know how all that works, because I'm assuming the CSO officer, his need for a vehicle for speed and all those kinds of, it has to be safe, definitely, but the need and the requirements of how many miles he's going to drive, et cetera, would that maybe work?
You're on.
That's an interesting question. It depends on how they rotate their vehicles out, how they manage their fleet. What ends up happening is you're passing on this used vehicle, which you don't know if it's even safe, like you said. So, I mean, it's something that can be explored, but anything they take out of service early would have to be replaced with a vehicle, with a new vehicle in service.
Right, but that would come out of the sheriff's budget, not the
G6 budget. Yeah.
Okay. Well,
I'm just trying.
I know. I get that. But first of all, I do want to clarify that we have no control over P6 money. That's money that's controlled through the P6 and through the sheriff's department and the county.
I understand.
And I think 100%. The best time to have that discussion would probably be with the P6 committee. Go to the meeting and talk to them about it.
So, Bill, I did attend the last P6 meeting, and that specific issue was discussed.
Oh, okay.
And they had looked at the possibility of different types of vehicles, and that they it was not suitable.
Okay, no, that's all I need.
Great, thank you. Future agenda items. Any? I just want to ask Director Mayor, at one point you had, as you recall, the night that we were discussing direction we're going to go with regards to representation at regional meetings, I wasn't able to be here. And I wasn't able to give my point of view, and for some reason the board felt it needed to be. It was an emergency on that night. You had talked about bringing something, in that motion you said you wanted to discuss a priority of meetings, or was there something more that you wanted to talk about on that subject?
And maybe I can jump in here quick. So we do have a meeting date scheduled, and I just turned to Mike and said, because what we were attempting to do is that whole item associated with which meetings that Bill,
Member
Mayor was raising, we wanted to make sure that everybody was present. We have a meeting scheduled. It's June something, and I don't remember
what it is. It's in a future agenda item.
June 7th. I've just been told June 7th.
Great. Thank you. That answers my question. Thank you. At this point, we have closed session items we need to address, so I'll turn the meeting over to council to bring us into closed session.
Thank you. The Town of Discovery Bay Board of Directors will adjourn into closed session per the agenda items listed on the agenda as N1 and N2.